of ethical perfection. You should do when you, because he's speaking about how to direct your actions. And he says you should this way, if you do it this way, it's maguna, if this way, it's meshubah. He's speaking about ethical perfection, about perfecting yourself. The Rambam is talking about a different phenomenon, philosophical perfection. That's what the Rambam's talking about. It's a different interpretation altogether. Two different realms. They look close. When you read them both, they look almost synonymous, but they're not. Benyon is ethical. The Rambam is the height of philosophical perfection. Knowledge, different thing. Results from the from his knowledge of God, his relationship to the ultimate reality, which is God. That's the Rambam. I just want to make sure, I know I'm repeating it, but I just want to make sure that it's clear. In other words, just you have to understand something, that just like a person's under the pleasure principle, it means he's drawn constantly by the pleasure principle. And everything he does, he's drawn. You see? The person that's on the level that the Rambam's talking about is drawn constantly also, but by a different principle. You have to understand what the Rambam's describing here. It means he's under the influence of a different principle. That's what it means. The analogy is good to understand what it is, the analogy from the pleasure principle, but it's a different type of a thing. You see? Now, how would you define the memory? Rabbi Yossi Yomai, Yi Mama Chavecha. So what are these three things? Mama Chavecha, Chavecha Shalach. How do they tie together? Haskei Nasvecha Lomot Torah, two. That's not a Yerusha. And Kol Ma'asecha Yi L'Shem Shemayim. How would you unify those three ideas? What's the one underlying concept in those three things? What is it? According to the Rambam, it's like this. So the first one, Mama Chavecha Chavecha Shalach, really reflects the idea that there is an object of justice that doesn't exist unless a person recognizes God, and he recognizes that the justice means that each person has an inherent right. He can't have a right unless somebody gave him the right. Okay? So the right was given by God. That's Mama Chavecha Chavecha Shalach. That's why if a person takes away somebody else's money, it means that he's not just simply over a lav metaraisa. He's denying that Tzelem Elokim is right. Because God dictated that this man has a right of ownership, of property. And you're taking away his right, you're denying that Tzelem Elokim. God's, the way God delineated that Tzelem Elokim should operate, should function. So that's one. The second one was Haskein Atzmecha L'Lomot Torah Sheini Yerushalach. So the Rambam explains that perfection in man is a skill. Right? We said perfection in man is a skill. It's not taking something that's potential and bringing it into actual. It's more than that. It's a skill. It's an acquired skill. And the last thing in the Rambam is the perfection principle. So these three things really have one thing in common. What's the one thing in common, basically? The one thing in common is what he did every day was, you see, the first Tana every day is talk about those things that take a person away from the world. Psychological things that remove a person. The crazy obsessions, all right? Over here, this reflects man. These three things have one thing in common. They reflect what the status of man is, what human status is. His status insofar as his right, he's endowed with a special right by God in terms of Schusse Mamon, you see? That reflects his status in the universe, that he has those rights, you see? His nature is such that he can reach perfection through the attainment of a skill, and also he can be under a different kind of a principle other than the pleasure principle, see? Those are the three things he said every day. So what he said every day was he placed before his mind's eye the level of Adam, the level of man, the human level. That's really what he placed before his mind's eye every day. That's the memory. Because every one of these chazal, when they used to say it every day, they always would say it. It means there was something they held before their mind's eye constantly in order that they shouldn't veer from the goal. See? So that's that's the memory. The memory is the greatness of man, man's stature. In other words, ethics is a reality. Ethics is not just be nice. Ethics is a reality. God gave man; it's a reality, just like you see a tree, or you see any other physical existence. There's ethics is an inherent right. As a matter of fact, I mean, that's what the Chazal say in the with the Shemesh and the Yireach, that that the Shemesh, that really the Yireach was also Bayom, but he complained, so God made him smaller. You know the Medrash. That the right? What is that? Right, that really the Yireach, the moon was as big as the sun. But what happened was that the moon complained. That the moon complained and because it complained, so God diminished the size of the moon, and it only shines at nighttime. Whereas the sun is the Mara Gadol, this was the Mara Katan, right? So what does Chazal mean with that memory? What does Chazal mean with that memory? What's the idea behind that? I hope from the Rambam's chat that the Chazal have an idea behind it. It's not just simply a story. What does it mean? I mean, the moon complained. What does it mean? What it means is that in Sheshes Yimei Bereshis, just like the moon, the sun, and all the planets were created and exist in reality, there's an ethical reality also. An ethical reality. It means that the ethical reality is just as real, as the physical reality. There's no difference. The person violates a law. The person takes away somebody else's property, it's a violation of a law of nature. There's no difference. It's a violation of a law of nature. It's not something which is done because it's not proper, or it's an actual violation. It's implanted in it's a reality. It's just as real. It comes from God. If it comes from God, it's just as real. That's what the Medrash really means. And that's why you say by the in the bruch of the Kiddush HaChodesh, you say that Shiyamale Halavana Velo Yesh Bashim Pagam. They say it in, it's not in the bracha. But it's to say, you say it in the Kiddush Levana, right? Yitzon Fanecha, you gotta sit over there. It says, Yiratzon Shiyamale Pagimas Halavana Velo Yesh. Go ahead. Right.
Right.
What does that mean? You want the moon to burning at nighttime? You can't go to sleep. I mean, what kind of a tefillah is that? What's the tefillah? The tefillah is that the whole idea was that the idea was the Pagima Salavana represents ethical imperfection. That's what it means. It represents a breach in the law of nature. And the whole idea of the whole bruch actually of the Birkas Salavana is really, it's not just on the Levana, it's a bruch on the whole astronomical system, the universe, on the whole universe, the chokhma of the entire universe. It just mentions the Levana because that's the only one that's obvious to man. You can see that very simply with changing of the different periods of the moon. But really represents the whole universe. And the bracha itself says, Ateres tefers lamuse vatin shehim asim mischarish kemosa, which means to say that the laws of history with regard to Klal Yisrael are just as real as the laws of the universe, the laws of astronomy. That's the bracha, really. That's why that bracha is the Kiddush Shemar Gadol. You're supposed to walk outside, look up from that shrine. It's a very most important bracha. So that's why you say the Yiratzon means that there should be removal of the breach of the laws of nature insofar as ethical perfection is concerned. Because there's a breach in the laws of ethical perfection. And remove the ethical imperfection. And what does it say if this is Shinema or Pasas? After that, you go. That's right. Shikayim Pasas Shinema, Victuous Hashem Lakatan, that's David Malcolm. It means that that's the highest level. That's really the highest level of ethical perfection. That's what the Rambam says. What's the highest? Victuous means. It's Israel. It's David Malcolm. Referring to Klal Yisrael, it means they should reach the level of total ethical perfection. That's the tefillah. That's the Rambam's b'chol derechecha da'eil. Levakesh biker levakesh hakadosh baruch. That's the bracha. Okay.
Five 519 85
Sunday morning, Pirkei Avos.
Okay, we're in Avos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud-Gimel. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Hevi Zohir B'Kriya Shema B'Tfilah. Okay, so these are one of the things that each Tana would say every day, and each one had a different formula that he said every day, or that he constantly said, that he constantly held before his eyes in order that he should reach perfection. So, okay, what did Rav Shimon say? Rav Shimon said like this: Hevi Zohir B'Kriyas Shema U'Betfilah. You should be very careful with Kriyas Shema and Tfilah. Alright, so the first question is, what does he mean you should be careful? Of course, it's in the Kriya Shema and Tefillah. Kriya Shema is a mitzvah same as a raisa. So you have to be careful about it. And Tefillah, according to the Rambam, is in the same as a raisa. And even if it's a drabbanan, but the fact is that a drabbanan doesn't require any less care. Requires just as much care in fulfilling the mitzvah as a deraisa. And I mentioned that many times. The Rav said it, the name Rav Chaim. There's no difference in keeping a drabbanan and in keeping a deraisa. Because the drabbanan is based on the pasuk of Lo Sosum Adava Pietar Sheirucha. And Lo Sosum. So the chiyuv to keep a drabbanan is the same chiyuv and deraisa. There's no difference. In chiyuv and mitzvah, there's absolutely no difference. There are different gedarim for the rabbanans, sofek rabbanans, different gedarim. But in shmiras and mitzvahs, there's absolutely no difference. And anyone who thinks there's a difference, it's clear. Denial of the chacham. So there's, in terms of zahiris, in terms of being careful to keep kriyas shema and tefillah, of course it's a chiyuv asayim at a raisa. So what is the zohir over here? What's the zohir? It's like any other asay. So Rabbeinu Yonah answers this question in a certain way. He says like this. He says that Hevi Zohir is only referring to Kriyas Shema. It's not referring to Tefillah. Alright? It's not referring to Tefillah. Why? He says, His hero Kriyas Shema Yosemi B'Tefillah. He told the person to be more careful about Kriya Shema than Tefillah. Why? Mineshezman Tefillah Godol V'Rochol Shehu Arba Shos. Because Tefillah can daven until 4 hours in a day. That means you take a day, break it up into 12 parts, and you take one third of it. Okay, so it's it'll be 4 hours when you have at the equinox. So 4 hours, a lot of time. It'll always be between three and a half and 4.5 hours, around there. So plenty of time, so you don't have to be so careful. But Kriya Shema, he says, you have to be very careful. Why? Because Kriya Shema must be said right before Hanetzachama. That's what he said. Zman Kriya Shema Katzer. Time for Kriya Shema is short. Umechuvinim Hanetzachama Kivasikim. V'zeh Lashon Hevi Zohir Ki Tzorach Zehiras Gedolah. Because Rabbeinu Yonah was of the opinion that Kriya Shema must be recited before sunrise. That was the Shita. That's what he held. That's really the Rabbeinu Yonah and Brachas. There's a Machlokas HaRishonim. Whether the Halacha of Hanetzachama relates essentially to Kriya Shema, or whether it relates to Tefillah. So those that say it relates to Kriya Shema maintain that you must say Kriya Shema before sunrise. Between Kriya Shema, in other words, the time for Kriya Shema is between Omer HaShachar, which is about an hour before sunrise, until sunrise. So if you say that some hold that that's what the halacha is, that you have to be careful when you recite Kriya Shema during that time. Others say no, the halacha is only its halacha in Tefillah. That Tefillah L'chatchila must be recited at sunrise. But Kriya Shema really you can say later. But the only thing is that you must have Kriya Shema right before Tefillah, plus there's a combination of Kriya Shema and Tefillah. So therefore, everybody agrees practically that the best time to daven is that you finish Kriya Shema right before sunrise, and you say Shemon Esrei right at sunrise. That's the right time to daven. But the question is, why? Is it because of Kriya Shema, or is it because of Tefillah? Question is, if I daven after Honetz, like most of us do, am I lacking in Kriya Shema, or am I lacking in Tefillah? So it's a machlokas Rishonim. Rabbeinu Yonah maintains he's lacking in Kriya Shema. Yeah, that's B'dievet. Only B'dievet. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, the way we say Kriya Shema, it's only B'dievet. Really, the Chatzilah, we're missing the essential time of Kriya Shema. The essential is mine, according to Rabbeinu Yonah. Fortunately, there were those that saw it differently, that maintained that the question of Tefillah. So they don't feel so bitter about it. Felix Zeret is Felix, but Seaborn, we have okay. But but according to Rabbeinu Yonah, you're really missing the essential theme of Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is a special designated time, which is before sunrise. Yes. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, there's two zmanim of Kriya Shema Midaraisa. The main zman is till Lani Zacham, and the next zman is from then on until the first quarter of the day. By the usual. All right. It seems very strange that you should have a halacha midaraisa with a lachatchila and a bidiyevet. You don't find things like that in midaraisas. A lachatchila is supposed to learn Krishna before Honetz Chachamah. But then bidiyevet is good until the first 3 hours in the day. In midaraisa, you don't find such formulation. But what do you have to say? I mean, how do you have to understand it? Yes. So in other words, so when he said Evizor B'Kriya Shema, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, what it meant was that since this month of Krishna is a difficult one, because you have to make sure to get up early in the morning, so he said you should be Zohar in Krishna. That's why he used the word Zohar. Alright? That's why he used the word Zohar. Of course, the difficulty is, what would the Rambam do with this? Because the Rambam maintains that really it's not because of Krishna. The Rambam maintains that it's because of Tefillah. That's why you need Honetz Chachamah. So if that's the case, the whole term in the Mishnah doesn't make any sense. You're saying Havizor B'Kriya Shema B'Tefillah. You can't say Havizor goes on Tefillah. You should have said Havizor B'Tefillah B'Kriya Shema. But the way it's written, it'll come out that the Lashon of Havizor really doesn't make any sense according to the Rambam. So we have to search for a different shot in the Rambam than Havizor. Alright? I don't think it's going to the Rambam, but Zohar can go on Krishna. The way of Rabbeinu Yonah, I don't think the Rambam runs that way. That Zohar can go on Krishna in terms of the time framework. It's impossible. It must be another set. Yeah. The question returns, the question we raised. The question was, what do you mean, heavy Zohar? It's a mitzvah say? It's a mitzvah say. According to the Rambam, you have to say like this. You see, a person's actions result from the way he views certain things. All right. So there are two frameworks in which a person relates to the mitzvahs. Two frameworks within which a person relates to the mitzvahs. One framework within which he relates to the mitzvahs is simply asiyas ha-mitzvahs. He has to do the mitzvahs. We're makabel the mitzvahs on Har Sinai, now we have to do the mitzvahs. The person has an obligation to do the mitzvahs. But over here, what the Mishnah is pointing out really is a different thing altogether. The Mishnah over here is not discussing the halachic obligation. But the Mishnah over here is concerned about philosophical perfection. That's the purpose of the Mishnah. So, different framework, right. So what Reb Shimon was saying was that in terms of philosophical perfection, Kriya Shema and Tefillah have a special place. They serve as a very special vehicle in bringing about perfection in man, different than other mitzvahs. In terms of chiyuv to keep all the mitzvahs, yeah, you have a chiyuv to keep all the mitzvahs. But a person will act differently towards the mitzvos if he perceives their chiyuv and their obligation on the different frameworks. So what the Mishnah over here is adding is that Kriya Shema and Tefillah have a special framework. It's a special framework because a person should realize that through the medium of Kriya Shema and Tefillah, he will reach a very special perfection. That's why he says Hevizor. Hevizor means a different framework. Not referring to the fact whether you have to do it or not. You have to do all the mitzvahs. But he means to say that you should have a special appreciation in the importance of Kriya Shema and Tefillah. And that will naturally result in a person being Zohar. That's what I would say to Rambam. That's what I say you have to learn Pshat the Rambam. Zohar means that there's another framework. Alright? A lot of mitzvahs matara, a lot of mitzvahs matarisa, but a person must look at the mitzvahs not just in terms of the halachic performance, but he must have an eye out for perfection. And in Kriya Shema and Tefillah, you find that they have a special, they serve as a special meal. All the mitzvahs are necessary. But there are certain mitzvahs that are more directly related, essentially related to human perfection. And Rav Shimon singled out Kriya Shema and Tefillah. More essentially related to human perfection. Okay. Now, what is the term Zohir? See, Zohir, so that's why a person should be very careful. But the word Zohir also has another implication. Because once a person realizes that something is very important, he does it naturally. And there is no reason to say anymore that he should be careful. Because if a person understands that something is good for him, so he naturally runs, he's attracted to it. And you don't have to tell him to be a Zohar. You should tell him, having his bonein, the Indian Kriya Shema Tefillah. You understand it? You understand the value of Kriya Shema Tefillah, so naturally you'll run to it and you'll do it. But Zohir is a different implication. Zohir has a special implication. Zohir means be very careful. What's the implication in being careful? Yes. Zohir means be careful. What does careful mean? Yes? Zohir means like this. Zohir means that you don't really understand. You see, a person is drawn to mitzvahs for two reasons. One reason that he's drawn to mitzvahs is because he understands, he's on a level where he understands the mitzvahs, so he naturally does it. Okay? That's one level. But then there is a situation where a person isn't really attracted naturally to the value of a mitzvah. He isn't attracted naturally to the value of a mitzvah. But he knows that it is the correct thing to do. You understand? He knows that it is the correct thing to do. That is a different kind of a level. That's where he needs the hero. Really, the difference between the Kovesh Yisro and between the Oved Me'ava that the Rambam mentions in the Shemona Prakim. Oved Me'ava doesn't need any Zahiris. Doesn't need any Zahiris. It naturally goes to it. Where does a person need Zahiris? Where a person is not on the level where he's an Oved Me'ava, where he naturally is drawn to it, because he doesn't really go to it because he loves it. Not attracted to it naturally, but he recognizes that this thing is an instrument of perfection. So he has to go against his nature. His nature really doesn't want it. But he recognizes in his mind that this is an important thing. So therefore, he has an opposing force. That's where he requires Zohar. That's where he requires Zohar. So what Reb Shimon is saying is, in other words, Kovesh is Yitzra. When you're in the area of Kovesh is Yitzra, you require Zohar. In the area of Ov Me'ava, the Hiris is not necessary anymore. So what Rav Shimon was saying was that in Kriya Shema and in Tefillah, a person must approach it, even though it goes, he must be aware of the emotions that he has, the counter emotions that he has against Kriya Shema and Tefillah, why it's difficult for him to do it, and he must be able to overcome those emotions. And the way we'll overcome is to recognize that this thing is going to be a medium of his becoming a greater person. Okay? Because we mentioned there's two types of perfection in man. One type of perfection in man is where he naturally sees the good, but the other type of perfection in man is where he doesn't naturally see the good. But yet he knows, his das tells him that if he does this action, it'll raise him to a higher level. That's the Kavod Shel Yitro. That's a very difficult thing to do. Very difficult thing to do. But that is necessary in order to reach the next level, in order to reach the level of Oved Me'avo. If he doesn't have that first level, he can't make it to the second level. And there are many people that can't reach perfection simply because they can't go through that process. Very difficult process. Difficult process. One part of him is drawn in one direction, and his mind tells him that that direction is bad. He doesn't see why it's bad. If he saw why it's bad, he wouldn't be drawn there. But he's in a conflict. He's in a conflict. And he has to be able to suppress those emotions to be able to follow what his mind tells him is the correct thing to do. This thing will lead to a better state for myself. The better state he can't really envision. If he could see what the better state was, he'd be drawn there. But he just knows, intellectually, he knows in his mind that it's a better state. That the real good lies in this area. And therefore, what he has to do is, he has to coerce himself to do certain activities which will lead to that change. But right now, before the change, he really can't see the good.
Can't take the pain?
See, where the person really can see the better state, he really sees it in his mind, so then he's drawn naturally, there's a better state. But where the person just knows it's a better state, but all his emotions are really attracted to a different better state. But he knows that this is there is a better state than this, but his emotions don't know what that state is. That's where you require a kovesh yitro. If a person can't do that, then he could never reach the next level. Very difficult, but that's really a thing. It's not something that this society really cares to do much. And that's why they can't see what perfection is. We just analyzed the word Zohir. But the fact that he used the word Zohir shows that there is some difficulty in Kriya Shema and in Tefillah. There is some inherent difficulty in Kriya Shema and in Tefillah which requires that a person should subdue his nature in order to partake of this benefit in order to improve himself. There's some very important thing here. I mean, it was so important, you see, that Rav Shimon made it one of those things that he thought about every day. Which means that there's something lies here that doesn't meet the eye at first. And on the contrary, a person is not attracted to it. A person has some type of a conflict in doing this. But if he really is a chacham, he'll overcome that conflict and he'll gain perfection from these two things. Because these two things, according to Shimon, were the main instruments of perfection. Main instruments of perfection. Yes. That's right. The Rambam in the end of the Mora. How the perfect worship God. So the Rambam says he spends a lot of time, a lot of words, on the importance of Kriya Shema and Tefillah.
Right. He says that you should.
Chavent every word. Now think about it. I know, right. That's right.
Stop the world. See,
it's a very important Rambam to go through. The Rambam in the end of the Mora. It really is not philosophical. In the sense that you have to have a background in abstract philosophy to understand this part of the Gemara. Everybody can understand it. Worthwhile to read it through. Yes. The Hamon does accept the idea of Kavod Shel Yitro when it comes to being an instrument of Mor Taiva. Yes, that's right. He was very smart because he controlled himself and he won the Olympic gold medal. He trained very well. And now he has much more Taiva than he could have had before. That's the... That's the Hamon's Kavod Shel Yitro. Not this. This is a different kind of Kavod Shel Yitro. This is a Kavod Shel Yitro where we have something else in exchange that you can't see. Different kind. So you see that Kriya Shema and Tefillah are singled out as the greatest instruments of perfection of Hamon. Right? You have to understand. I think that there's nothing more important really than understanding, having a clear understanding of Kriya Shema and Tefillah and why it's important. And how it's important, and the difficulties involved, and how one can overcome these difficulties, because this is a means that one of the most important means of the Torah gave us to perfection. See, Zohar implies that there is a greater importance attached to it. Doesn't mean he's not going to do it. He has to do a chivin sasei. But a zohir means, what I'm trying to say is that zohir doesn't mean it's a matter of doing it or not doing it. He'll do it anyways. But a zohir does something with concern. He does something with tremendous, it's how he does it. Zohir, it means how he does it. Does he simply do it because it's a chiv ha-mitzvah, I have to do it, fine. But a zohir means he's very concerned about its performance. He thinks about it beforehand. Krishna is coming up, it hits him. There are many things that a person will do in his life, he'll do them anyways. But a person will not drink a glass of water with the same enthusiasm that he goes out to buy a new car. See? It's a different thing. He may do both. But the way he does it is a different thing. Zohar means not a matter of his not do make sure that you don't miss it, according to the Rambam. You won't miss it. But Zohar means the man is very concerned about the performance. It stands out in his mind as something extremely important. That's what it means. He'll do it anyways. But the way he does it is not the same way as if he's a Zohar. That's what Zohar means. Zahirus means you relate to the thing in a certain way, great care, great concern. Okay? Now we have to understand really what is there in Kriya Shema and Tefillah that is so important and that raises a person to the highest level. And we have to understand what the difficulties are, the conflicts involved in Tefillah and Kriya Shema. Because there are big, big difficulties. Chazal said, be Zohar, it means that there's a problem here. There's an emotional problem here. Okay. What really is the essence of Kriya Shema and Tefillah? I mean, halachically, let's take a look at halachically. Halachically, what do you find really that singles out Kriya Shema and Tefillah? It singles out. What is interesting about the performance of Kriya Shema and Tefillah in halacha that shows that it has a very special importance? Okay. What? Yeah, it's a key and belay, but I mean, before we get to the just plain halachically, there's one very important halacha. Very practical halacha. I'm talking about a practical halacha. What's practical halacha? When everything is time, but there's one important halacha. What's the important halacha? The important halacha is the pasuk. The pasuk says it's not just enough that a person davens, but one of the greatest violations is if a person does something before tefillah. Before tefillah. It's not just like any other mitzvah. Lulu presses mitzvah say, so of course he's not supposed to be involved in different things. But over here it's more than that. In tefillah is not just a matter of halacha that you have to make sure you do tefillah, like lulu. But in tefillah, if a person does something before tefillah, he lacks, he takes away from the very essential nature of tefillah. If a person does something before lulav, so it's a question of it's the time of a mitzvah, so you're not allowed to do something else. You may forget the mitzvah, so it's a different thing. But over here, it's a different halacha in Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema and Tefillah is not just because it's a zman a mitzvah. You have to do a mitzvah; you can't do anything before it. If you do something before Kriya Shema, before Tefillah, you're taking away. You're lacking the very essential concept of Kriya Shema and Tefillah. How do you know? Because there are psukim that talk about it. There are psukim that talk about it. If a person, for instance, eats, if a person eats before Kriya Shema and Tefillah, so you know the problem in the Acharonim, the whole question of the eating before going to shul and all the heterim and the problems. Why? Because it's not just a question of shor veris. I mean, you won't be mispowel. It's a question of the very nature of the tefillah. Pasuk says, "Va'osi yishlachto acharei gavecha." Means a person who eats before tefillah means he threw God away, like he threw God away behind his back. It shows he's lacking in the very essential nature of what tefillah is. Not just because it's a shas mitzvah. He's lacking in the concept of tefillah. There's another halacha that a person is not allowed to go to his friend's house before he davens, or call up his friend on the phone before tefillah. Call his friend on the phone before tefillah. Why not? It's a pasuk. It says chidlu lochem min ha'adam ki bameh nechshavot. You should chidlu lachem in Adam. Stop yourself from man. Ki b'men nechshavu. Because what is man? What is man worth? So Chazal say, al tikri b'men ela b'ma. B'ma means, b'ma was an altar that they used to use before the you're not allowed to use after the Migdash. Ki b'ma hu nechshav. Person, b'ma means almost like an avodah zara. That's the implication. So what is the implication from these psukim? What is the implication from these psukim, from this chazal? What does it show you? It shows you a very important thing about tefillah. What is the idea? It shows you, yes, it has to be the first thing, right? You can't be involved in this type of before, right? But it shows you one thing. It shows you that tefillah is something which gives a person his whole concept of reality. His whole concept of reality. Man's concept of reality is distorted. How is man's concept of reality distorted? Because really the pasuk was good enough. Chidlu lachem min ha'adam ki b'ma nechshavu. It's a very good pasuk. Why doesn't one have to say, I'll take it from the male of b'ma? See? What's the implication? B'ma nechshav means, because what is man worth? So stop. Chidlu lachem min ha'adam means remove yourself from man. What does it mean? Such strong language, remove yourself from man. What does it show you? It shows you that the human emotions are tied very strongly to man. They're very tied very strongly to people. That's where the person's emotions really, underneath, if you dig, you'll find that the person's emotions, his underlying emotions are attached to man. That's why Chazal say, the Gemara says, that a person's Yerushalayim should be, what did Tanya say? A person's Yerushalayim should be as great as his Yerush B'nai Adam. The Gemara says, that's a level? So the Gemara says, halavai, it should be that level. Because you see, when a person does an avera, what does he think to himself? His first concern is, shaloi yirani adam, nobody should see me. Okay. So what does that show you? What does Chazal perceive here? Right. So you see that a person by nature, really what bothers a person, the underlying thing that he's concerned with is man. That's his underlying concern. That's his nature. His nature is such. He's worried about what other people think of him. I mean, this is very important in his life. And as much as he thinks he's worried about the Rabbeinu Shalom, the truth of the matter is that unconsciously his main concern is for, his main concern is in terms of how he's viewed by other people. That's his main concern. He'd be shattered. If everybody would come to him and tell him that he's no good, that he has nothing to do with him, he'd be shattered. So underneath the unconscious, the underlying motivation in man is really how his status is among people. That's the underlying thing. So chidlu lachem min ha'adam. What does chidlu lachem min ha'adam means? That's why it's a strong lashon. Chidlu lachem min ha'adam. Stop already from man. Ki b'men echshavu. What is he? He's nothing. The person is nothing. Even the melech basav adam hayom kana mochel bekeva. Like the Gemara says, today is here, tomorrow is God. So people know this is a fact, but in terms of psychological reality, even though he knows these facts and he knows people are really, man is really nothing but men achshavu, but the fact is that his emotions are drawn to that. And even when he does a maisa mitzvah, and even when he's concerned about not violating an avera, behind, in the back of his mind, is always adam. That's what lies in the back of his mind. What would this guy think of me if he saw me do it? That's his concern. So chidlu lachem min ha'adam, what does it mean? That's why it says ki not b'men, al tikri b'men ela b'ma. B'ma means it's a powerful force, like an avodah zara, that's drawing him. That draws him. That's why Chazal say that a person has to recognize what this emotion is, in order to be able to withdraw from it. Chazal were very big on not hiding the emotions, uncovering them. so that a person can face them and he can hope to reach a level of a higher level of reality. Yeah. So what really is Kriya Shema and Tefillah? What's the definition of Kriya Shema and Tefillah? The definition of Kriya Shema and Tefillah is a total removal from that state of mind that a person always lives with, that a person's emotions are naturally drawn to. That's really what Kriya Shema and Tefillah are. A total removal, and to be able momentarily just to live or to experience objective reality, forgetting about every influence that is exerted upon a person, removing himself from every influence that is exerted upon a person because of his attachment to man. Because of his attachment to man. You see? That's why the Pasuk says, Chidlu lochem en ado. Stop already. It's enough already. The implication is that his whole psychological being is so wrapped up in this that the pasuk comes along and is mechayev him for a moment, just a momentary release from this false state of existence. And when does he have this release from the false state of existence? When? Kriya Shema Tefillah. That's the means for removing. That's the means. Yeah. What's the idea that you shouldn't call your friend? Doesn't mean guys, you know, someone's going to get up in the morning and decide to call a friend. It means there's something very important to talk to his friend about. Extremely important. He went to sleep at night, he's thinking about it. First thing in the morning is, he's drawn, I have to tell him this. I have to call him up.
That's okay? Important.
So what happens then, that's where the pasuk says, stop. Chibu lechem en adam ki bamenech shavu. Forget about this the reality that you think is important. There's a completely objective frame of reality. There's the source of the entire universe. And if you look at it, if a person looks at the total picture, sees the total picture, everything else becomes so insignificant, his dealings become so insignificant, that it's simply, it's impossible for him to even be concerned with whatever it is. It becomes nonsensical. That's the idea of tefillah. That's why in tefillah it's so important that a person should not do anything before tefillah. It means that his first confrontation in the morning, his first confrontation with reality in the morning, every morning a person confronts reality anew. What should his first confrontation with reality be? Kriya Shema Tefillah. Kadosh Baruch Hu. If that's not his first confrontation, if something comes before that, then it's the tefillah is worthless. It's not like lulav. The person did something before the tefillah is lulav. It was shasa mitzvah, so he didn't do it. It's different. That's a different type of halacha. But over here it means his whole concept of tefillah is warped if he does it. If he doesn't daven first. Or if he should, his feelings and his emotions that are tied to man should find expression before tefillah, then his whole concept of reality is completely gone. That's the part. He bummo. Should realize how important it is for a person is psychologically how important other people are. The halacha of not speaking to a person before tefillah is only in shacharis, because that's the way it should be. Can't have a person has to go about his business and what is he supposed to do? He's not supposed to talk to anybody until after minor, so he's not going to have so much time left for that. No, but it means. But the concept of mincha minor is the exact same. Is the exact same concept. It means what is tefillah? What really is tefillah? Tefillah really is a momentary withdrawal from the false world that his emotions live in. Momentary withdrawal. Chidlu lachem en adam. Stop already. 1 minute. Give yourself 1 minute reprieve from this type of involvement, and remove yourself into an area of absolute reality. That's what tefillah really is. Really, what it comes down to is something that we spoke about at length once: that there are two realities that a person lives in. There's a psychological reality that a person lives in. And then there's an objective reality that a person lives in. People are mainly involved in the world of psychological reality. In terms of objective reality, it's absolutely nonsensical. But for the emotions, the psychological reality is a tremendous pull, tremendous draw. And the godless ha'adam, the greatness of man, is expressed in making that transition from the world of psychological reality to the world of objective reality. People can't tolerate objective reality too long. It's very difficult and it's very painful. But the Torah's machayev a person to remove himself from the psychological reality three times a day through Kriya Shema and through Tefillah. And through that, as a means, it will make a change in his whole perception of reality. That's why a person has to be a Zohar in this area. That's the significance of the area. Really, what is Tefillah really? Kriya Shema and Tefillah can be defined in two words. It's a moment of sanity. We have to analyze Kriya Shema, what precisely Kriya Shema is, what Tefillah is, and what the combination is, because you see there's some type of combination. Okay? All right. How would you define Kriya Shema? What's the definition of Kriya Shema? What's the definition of Kriya Shema? Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim. That's right. That's what it is. Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim. What does Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim mean? What does it mean, Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim? Acceptance of the heavenly yoke. So what does it mean, acceptance? I mean, what are you supposed to do? What does it mean? On a basic, I can tell you what it means on a basic level, what everybody thinks it means. On a basic, another thing is wrong, because in Yadis, I mean, you have to go up the ladder, so every step is important. You reach a higher step, you realize that the lowest step, you abandon the lowest step, but it doesn't mean that the lowest step wasn't important in order to reach the second step. But to most people, Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim simply means an acceptance upon myself that I will perform certain painful activities. That's what it means. Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim. I don't want to do it. I accept it. I'm going to force myself to do it. Okay, which isn't really bad. I mean, which really isn't bad. It's correct. But the only thing is that usually there's something else that goes with it that takes away from the level. There's something else that goes with it. And actually we'll see, as we unravel Kriya Shema and Tefillah, that in Kriya Shema and Tefillah, if a person can't be mispalel properly, it's because he doesn't have the correct notion of Tefillah. He doesn't have the correct notion of Tefillah. We'll see what that is. What is this Kabbalah necessary? What do you need the Kabbalah for? Believe in God. It's one of the Yesodi Adas, the basic, most basic first Yesodi Adas. Lahamin Leidal Sheyesh Ka, and this is it. And now, what does he have to do now? Yes.
Maybe a person taking on a sense of their place. Their place.
Kabbalah.
To serve and to be
Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim means that the idea, the intellectual idea that a person has of God and of reality, it becomes more than just an intellectual idea. It means that his whole personality is moved by that idea and is changed by that idea. His emotions, all his feelings, everything becomes in line with this idea. His nature, his whole nature, to the point where he removes the conflict that exists. Man by nature is a creature of conflict. His mind sees one thing, his emotions go in the other direction. Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim is, Kabbalah means he accepts it, it means that there's a conversion process that takes place. That a part of him that wasn't in line with this idea becomes in line with the idea. That's what Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim means. The part of his nature that is fighting, that is what? The contrary part comes in line with the mental concept, the mental perception that he has of God. That's really what Kabbalah means, where the person's nature, in Yadis, the perfection of man is where he functions as a whole. By nature, we know man is conflicted. Man is two different parts. But what is Yadis? What is the solution of Yadis? The solution of Yadis is that he has to work on it at different intervals, different variations of degrees. But at certain times at least, he should realize that state. The rest of the day, I mean, he's going to slip back. But because he slips back, doesn't mean that he didn't make any headway. Does not mean that he didn't make. On the contrary, he slips back. But the realization, in those moments that he has, where he realizes what the truth is, make an effect on the person, and slowly but surely he rises to a higher level. Kabbalah Shamacha Shamayim means the recognition. But the recognition means, the reason why it involves a Kabbalah, it's not just an abstract recognition, it's a recognition, a personal recognition. A recognition which really is in line with, which really affects his whole nature, his whole being. And that, and the part of him, his emotions follow along as well. The whole personality follows along. That's that's what's Kabbalah Shamach Shamayim. If a person just has it as an abstract idea, as a philosophical idea, but it's not a part of his nature, that's not Kabbalah Shamach Shamayim. He's a maimon. He's a maimon. He believes he's part of Yadus because he accepts the most major premise of Yadus, but it's not Kabbalah Shamach Shamayim. Kabbalah Shamach Shamayim is a different thing. It means where the person's whole nature is in line with that idea. That's the Kabbalah. That's Kabbalah from Malchus Shemayim. Okay? It's a recognition. What? No. No. That's right. It's a Kabbalah of the emotions, the whole personality. Everything. Everything has to be in line. If the emotions are not in line, the personality is not in line with us, then it's not Kabbalah from Malchus Shemayim. He's a maimon. He's not a Kaifer Biker. There's no, there's a difference. To be a maimon is one of the Yisodi Adah, the Yisodi of the Das, the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the most basic Yisod, Yisodi Yisodos. But if the person's emotions are not in line with that idea of God, then it's not Kabbalah Samachos Shemayim. It's not Kabbalah. It's Yidia. Mitzvah Seyachas, Leida Sheyesh Shom Alekhaim Matzah. Rambam's first mitzvah, Nechad Hashem Alekhecha. That's one mitzvah. But Kriya Shema is more than Nechad Hashem Alekhecha. Kriya Shema is a separate mitzvah. So there's Yediyas Hashem, the mitzvah of Nechad Hashem Alekhecha, philosophical recognition of God. And then the Torah added another mitzvah. The second mitzvah is Kriya Shema. Pamayim Bachal Yom. Pamayim Bachal Yom, it means that this idea of Nechad Hashem Alekhecha has to be one which the person realizes in terms of his emotions, in terms of the rest of his nature, the rest of his being has to fall in line with that idea. That's Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. Okay, of course, the higher the idea of God is, that's why we said it's subject to variation of degree, because it depends what his idea, one follows the other. In other words, a person who has a higher concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his Kabbalah Samach Shemayim, of course, is greater. So Kabbalah Samach Shemayim, really, there are two variables in Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. One variable is what his concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one. And the second variable is how much his emotions are in line with that concept. That's the second variable. Those two things work together. A person can have a higher concept, but the rest of his being is not in line with that concept. So he could have a less of a Kabbalah Samach Shemayim than a person that has a lesser idea, but his whole nature is in line with it. And conversely, the other way. It's Kabbalah Samach Shemayim has two variables. That's the way it works. And that's Pamayim Bachol Yom. That a person needs twice a day. And Nechad Hashem Alekhecha is once. He knows it. That's it. He understands it. Comprehends it. it's a mitzvah. It's a constant mitzvah. But it's not a mitzvah that two different times of the day were designated, set aside for the person changing his nature. Kabbalah Samach Shemayim is a process of change. Okay? It's not a constant state of Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. Only the Malachim are like that. But the person is not that way. A person, yeah, he has the time of Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. So yeah, this is big on time periods. Like, for instance, you have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Why? I have to tshuva every day. I mean, I have to tshuva every day. But the answer is that Yadus recognizes that you have to work within a person's nature, within a person's framework. If you had a Aseret Yemei Tshuva all year round, it wouldn't have any meaning anymore. But you have to have once a year the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. So it's a special time. Every year he designates several days of the year to raise himself to a higher level. But that's why you have to have the whole system of Torah. Because only a Kadosh Baruch Hu with his Chachma can know precisely how to work out the formula for perfection. Kabbalah Samach Shemayim is twice a day. And three times a day is not the mitzvah. Once a day is not the mitzvah. Then twice a day, it means that this is the method through which a person will raise himself to a higher level. If you tell him Kabbalah Samach Shemayim every minute, that's nonsense. This is the way it has to be done. There's a difficulty here, and you have to know precisely how to maneuver in order to do it. That's the formula of the Torah. Yes. That's Kabbalah Samach Yomayim. Fine. So, Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a constant mitzvah. Constant mitzvah. That's right. Because it has to be constant. Because since it has to do with a person's perception and knowledge of God, and we know in Yahadus it's not just simply a person believes in God. I mean, there's more to it than that. And in Yahadus, reaching to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a very long process that involves tremendous chokhmah. So it's a constant thing that a person, the more he grows, his ideas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu become greater. He comes closer and closer. His ideas change. He gets a better perception, greater and greater perception. Not just a simple thing. Believe in God and that's it. And it's a tremendous... So it's a person's whole lifetime is spent in trying to improve and get closer and understand more of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing more. And that requires tremendous chachma, tremendous work, tremendous involvement. It's a constant mitzvah. It's a constant mitzvah. It's a philosophical mitzvah. It's not limited. No, it's all the time.
That's
right. It's Kabbalah's Machshavah is limited. That's right. Why? Exactly. Right. Why? Because Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim has to do not with the intellectual alone, but Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim has to do with changing the personality, the emotions. The time that's designated to change a person's psyche, the way his psyche relates to reality. That's twice a day. Can't tell a person all the time, it's ridiculous. He goes back to his work, he goes back to his emotions, he goes back to his regular way. But the point is that moment, what Yadis tells you is like this. That moment in which you see reality, that moment is what raises you to a higher level. No, you go back, that's right, a person goes back, that's what a person is. But the fact is that he does perceive those two times a day, he raises himself, he's in the world of reality, he's raising himself to a higher level constantly. That's the way to do it. A person sees the mezuzah, like the Rambam says, in the door, that moment, he thinks about Yichud Hashem, he raises himself to a higher level. Of course, naturally, he's going to slip back. You can't take the mezuzah off the door. It's not a one-time thing. He's going to slip back again, he comes back. But that's the way he perfects himself. A person goes up and back. The perfection is a process of going up and down. But ultimately, through that process, he does raise himself to a higher level. That's the method of Yadis. Okay. I'm very glad you mentioned that. That's true. In society doesn't tolerate that idea. Because society says it's hypocrisy. All or nothing. Right. What are you? Society can't recognize. The problem with society is they can't recognize the imperfection in man, and they can't recognize the fact that man has a dual nature. He has a dual nature. So he has to live on different levels. Once he lives in psychological reality, then he lives in objective reality. He swings back and forth. The pendulum swings back and forth. The world does not recognize that because the world considers it hypocritical. For a very simple reason, because they have a very shallow idea of perfection. To them, perfection is they can walk around and thinking that they're very great. See? And this way of perfection doesn't let you do that. Because you swing back and forth. So you can't have an absolute idea of yourself as being this great person. You can't fulfill this image that you're such a great person. How can you be a great person? Because you look where you did 5 minutes ago, look where you were at. You see? So a person can't find it difficult to tolerate that. Because in our society, a person must always have a certain image of himself and feel very good about his image. If you want to feel very good about his image, this method is very difficult. Because he can't. He's swinging one minute. What does the Rambam say when a person's in tefillah? What's the lashon of the Rambam? What's the kavanas alev in the Rambam? Where the Rambam says how a person is mechaven by tefillah. What does he say? What's the lashon? He says, ki'ilu, you're right. Ki'ilu omeid bashamayim. Kilo omeid bashamayim, wasn't it? He's like he's standing in the heavens. What does that mean? Standing in the heavens? What whole kind of idea is that? What does it mean? It means he's totally withdrawn from the earth. Completely. Completely withdrawn from all earthly matters. Kilo omeid bashamayim. It's total removal from everything that surrounds his life. That's the mental state. So how could a person be in that state and the next minute he's back involved in all this nonsense? How is it possible? The answer is, if he recognizes that it's possible, and if he recognizes that this is the reality of his nature, he has the duality in his nature, and it's impossible for him just to be on one plane and to feel that he's such a great tzaddik. This is false. It's wrong. Ain't tzaddik bar shi'as tel lo yechta. The person recognizes that the only way that he can improve himself, on the contrary, is by having a realistic view of his nature. And he does. He says, what does the Chazal say? A person is a malach and a behema. Malach and a behema, sometimes he's a malach, sometimes he's a behema. It's true. It's true. He vacillates from one extreme to the other extreme. But that's his nature. That's his nature. Yad just recognizes his nature, and Yad just works within his nature to make him reach the higher level. Doesn't try to make him into something that he's not. It's not hypocritical. It's the reality. On the contrary, those who maintain that a person, they want to believe, fool themselves into making a person into something that he's not, and to deny part of his true nature, they're destined to fail. They have to fail because it's not in line with reality. That's really the philosophy of Yadis. Yadis works with a person the way his nature really is. He has to recognize both sides of his nature. Sometimes like a malach, he'll be 1 minute in tefillah, he's omid b'shamayim, and the next minute he's involved in all kinds of nonsense. See? That's his nature. But that's the way he has to move ahead. He has to move ahead in that way. Two tracks. Moves ahead in two tracks. Goes up and back. Yes. Because the person only wants, the people who take it as hypocritical, all they're interested in is one thing. To satisfy their emotion that they have is fulfilled a certain image of their ego. That's what they're after. Not after perfection, they're after a certain image of themselves. And that image can't tolerate this, because how could you have an image if you're going from here to there? I mean, there's no image there. If you want to satisfy that image, this society really only sees perfection as a satisfaction of that image. That's what perfection is to them. You see? And Yad sees it the way it is in reality. The reason why we suffer is because of society. We suffer the effects of the philosophy of the society that we live in. You cannot escape it. There's no way to escape it. The reason why it's painful is because you've been raised with this idea of an image. And you can't change it. You see? But a person who's a chacham has to recognize that what society's ideas are based on are absolutely just shallow emotions, nothing. And when a person sees what the true perfection of man, what the true state of man is, he has to change that image. On the contrary, of course there's a desire for a person to move ahead. But he has to recognize what the real perfected person is and how he really is. On the contrary, he has to be able to change it. Once he changes that, he'll find, not only will he find that he's achieving greater heights in terms of perfection, but he'll find he's living more realistically, and he'll find he'll remove a lot of the pains that he has from the other nonsensical system. Because if a person lives with himself in line with reality, then he has to be a happier person. He has to be a happier person. He's moving ahead, he's happier, and he has a better life. Of course he has to give up that which society has given to him. He has to do that. He has to recognize this thing is false. But once he recognizes this thing is false, the motivation that went before into establishing that image will now be used to live according to real perfection. The same motivation will be transferred. The image is not a part of the impact of the emotion. You understand what I mean? The emotion is to perfect himself. Society taught him it's through this image. But if a person who recognizes this as false will be able to take that energy and instead of directing it to an image, what he'll direct it to is true perfection. That's when he'll improve his life, have a happier life, and he'll really be able to achieve higher levels of perfection. The other way is a standstill. Okay. At best. What is tefillah? What is tefillah? Where does tefillah fit in there? Okay? And tefillah, you see, the pasuk Yiru'ucha Mshemesh refers to tefillah. Yiru'ucha Mshemesh means those who fear you, they will fear you at sunrise, the beginning of the day. Okay? So Yiru'ucha Mshemesh refers to tefillah, interestingly enough. One would think Yiru'ucha Mshemesh refers to Krishna. That's also Yiru'ucha. Why is it tefillah? Why is it the second segment, not the first? So there must be something in tefillah that's different. What's different in tefillah? What really is tefillah? What is tefillah? Okay? What is there left? I mean, after the person has Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim, his emotions are completely in line with reality. What is left there for tefillah? What is left? What's the answer? The difference between Kriyat Shema and between tefillah is... Kriyat Shema really is in potentia what tefillah actualizes, really what Kriyat Shema is. Kriyat Shema really is exists in potentia. Tefillah is a realization, an actualization of Kriyat Shema. Why? Because the thing is like this: a person has to function. A person can't just be a person has to live, has to function. He can't. He's not just a creature that recognizes an abstract idea and that's it. But he has to live according to these ideas. Tefillah is the moment he recognizes what true reality is. Now the second thing he does is he reflects on his life. And how does this fit in? How does my life fit in with this? Because he can't be just in a state of perception. He has to be in a state of living. He has to live. He has to perform. A person has to function. There's a function of man. There's a psychological function. A function of the soul, a function of the body. The person has to a person just can't live in abstract. I mean, there's something that's realized in the way he lives. The moment that he has this realization of Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim, the next thing is, now how does it relate to my life? What do I need? What's lacking in my life in order that these ideas should be part of my functioning, you say? And then he formulates his tefillah. He faces first it's a recognition of the source of reality, and the recognition of what the true objective world is, and then he confronts the source of reality, and he confronts the source of reality and makes a request for those things that are necessary in order that his life is in line with this reality. That's really what tefillah is. So tefillah really is an actualization of what the Kriya Shema, what the recognition of Kriya Shema was. That's why tefillah follows Kriya Shema directly. It must be immediately after Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is the realization and abstract, and also it puts the emotions in line, but then he has to expend energy soon. He has to start living. He has to expend energy. It's a process. He has to start the process of living. The process of living demands certain things, and he realizes where he's falling short from what he needs in order to live with these ideas. And that's where he formulates his tefillah. Since he knows that God answers tefillahs, so the most natural thing for him to do is to make a request from the source of all reality that his life should partake and should live according to these ideas. It's an actualization, a realization of what Kriya Shema has established in the person's mental framework. That's what tefillah really is. And that's why tefillah has to be a thought out. That's why tefillah has to be a thought out petition. It's thought out. Has to be thought out, because if it's not, then it's not based upon the realization of Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim. Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim is a total realization, the intellectual and the personality, everything. Then the next step is, what do I need in order to live in line with these ideas? And he formulates his tefillah. That's why Chazal formulated the tefillah. First thing is atachon olam das. The first thing a person needs is knowledge. First thing. It's all the Seder over there. Shevayim v'nosar sechla. Tshuva. Second thing. Slach lanei v'chatanu. Kapara, mechila. All the whole Seder atfila. Fa'inu, physical well-being of the guf. Baruch aleinu. All the necessities. Then tkabe shofar, to reach the perfect state. So we're lacking that every day. Missing. If a person doesn't realize that he's missing the perfect system, the total lack in his life, so he doesn't have any idea what perfection is. Shiva Sheftenik Varishonig, that's any of our kula. That's many Yagam Anocha. Yagam Anocha. It's not something that a person really feels. The real Yagam Anocha that he's worried about is not this Yagam Anocha. He's worried about his other nonsensical Yagam Anocha. But the tefillah formulates what the real Yogan Vanacha is, not to have the Shoftim, not to have the Chachomim to go to, not to have the system working properly. This is really what we're missing. So tefillah is a perfect formulation of what is lacking once he's in the world of Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim, then he sees what he needs in order to reach this level that he can live this way. And since God answers tefillahs, so the most natural response is that he speaks to God, he makes a request to God that he should have those things that he's lacking. It's a total realization, an actualization of the Kabbalah Samacha Shemayim. That's why the Pasuk Yeruchom Shemesh goes on tefillah. Not on Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim. Because in tefillah is everything that's in Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim actualized. That's Yerucha. Yerucha means, the state of Yerucha means that he's living according to these ideas. He's living according to these ideas. Yes?
In regards to
over here we're discussing the what tefillah is on the highest philosophical level. Over there I was trying to show what the halacha, how the halacha formulates tefillah, that the main thing is the ideas. True. Both are right. At any rate, so that's really what tefillah is. Tefillah is the most natural response. Most natural response of a person who recognizes reality. Tefillah is the most natural response. The only thing that we have to understand is if that's the most natural response, why is it so difficult and why is it so rare? Real tefillah, rare. Very difficult. Chazal recognizes difficult things. It's one of the things Einan Nisum and Macholian is a thought that interferes with his tefillah. See? Yeah. It's an interesting, what? That's Rishma probably. The answer really is, I think it's a very important idea. It's an important thing. The answer is because we suffer from the world of the psychological reality. That's the problem. That world that we were discussing, that Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim is supposed to remove us from, unfortunately interferes with our tefillah. You see? You're right when you say Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim is not right, then tefillah is not an asterisk. Tefillah is the most natural response for a human being who is a creation of God, and given the knowledge that he has about God, his tefillah is the most natural response. But unfortunately, a person doesn't live in that world of reality. And that's why people don't like tefillah. They don't like tefillah. And the Chazal recognize that people don't like tefillah. Because the next memory in Reb Shimon is, Al tas tefilascha keva, ela rachmin v'sachnunum lefnei amakam. Don't make your tefillah keva. What does tefillah keva mean? Tefillah is a burden. I have to daven now. Okay, I have to daven. And okay, I figure it'll take me 25 minutes, and then I'll have breakfast. Friends waiting for me. You know, he's looking forward to that. But I can't not daven. I have to daven. That's tefillas kela. I have to daven as tefillas kela, where it's not a natural response. Now, why is it? Why is it that the Chazal recognize that this is a big problem? Why is it that tefillah becomes kela, when in reality it's the most natural response for man? What's the answer? The answer is because the person cannot remove himself from the psychological framework that he lives in. And in that psychological framework, as a matter of fact, there's a Chuvas Rivash that says one of the problems they had with philosophy, there were big problems with learning philosophy that the Rishonim talk about. Because they found that people who learn philosophy, you know, I mean, so the Mora was put in the Ferrum, and you have to realize, I mean, as much as we're are fans of the Rambam here, but the fact is that since there was such a machlekes like that in Kol Yisrael, and on the other side of the machlekes there are some big people too, and Rabbeinu Yonah himself was one of them, and you see from learning Pirkei Avos how deep Rabbeinu Yonah is. So you have to understand there was a reason for it, because what happened was that the philosophy that people were studying was causing problems, and a lot of people would lose a lot of their attachment to Yadas. And I don't know, I mean, I can't say if people lost their Amunah, it's not, but they became weaker, a lot of, that's for sure. A lot of certain people. It affected certain people in a bad way, and that's why Rishonim stepped in. And the question was, really, and the Rambam recognized it too, although the Rambam writes in the Sefer that a Sefer won't harm anybody. That's what the Rambam writes in the Sefer, because the Rambam recognized that philosophy can harm a person. But other Rishonim didn't feel the way the Rambam did, and that was their opinion. And they felt that even what the Rambam wrote could cause problems for certain people. Depends who you have in mind. And the Rivash says, the Chuvas Rivash in the area, and the Rivash says that one thing you'll notice, that one of the characteristics, one of the objections that they made to philosophy was that people who study philosophy immediately stop davening. That's what he says. That was one of the big criticisms. I forgot who it was that said that. One, I think it was a Rishon that said it, not a mistake. And that's why they banned it. That's why they banned it. Now, why? I mean, how is this so? I mean, it's certainly, this is certainly a case of, that he talking, Rishon talking about an important area. It's not a machlekes in the Yisodei Hadassah world. It's a machlekes in the practicality of how to, what is the best thing for people to do. So the Rashba came out with a takona that if the person's 25, he shouldn't study philosophy. But everybody recognizes that Yadus has a deeper understanding. There's a deeper understanding in Yadus. Nobody denies that. It's in the Mishnah, in Maisa Makov, in Maisa Bereishis. Everybody knows it. And everybody's aware there's a danger in entering that area. You see? But simultaneously, I mean, the Machlekes says how to go about it. How much do you release? How much do you let people know? I mean, you want people to know, but you don't want them to be harmed. Now, why does it harm a person? Why does that phenomenon take place? Very simple. Because what happens is that the person was operating in one framework, and now you give him a totally new dimension. What happens is he's totally at odds with himself now. Because before he was doing things for a very foolish reason. And now he sees it was foolish. He has nothing to replace the old foolish way of doing things with. And therefore he can't do it anymore. See? The person davens for a nonsensical reason, so an infantile reason. Once he's going to find out that infantile reason is wrong, he's going to stop davening. He can't. He has no motivation to daven anymore. As long as he can't, as long as he doesn't see a deeper concept in tefillah, he will be. He's in trouble. He's going to leave it. See, but the truth is, the problem is not so much his realization, but the problem is what he fails to realize. What he fails to realize. That's the problem. It's a dangerous state. It's an in-between state. Now, in tefillah, one of the greatest difficulties is that a person does not relate to tefillah as a mature individual, but he relates to tefillah in an infantile way. And as long as a person doesn't appreciate tefillah, he is in an infantile state. That's the truth of the matter. He hasn't reached maturity. The person, the mature person in Yadus, is a person who, to him, tefillah, he loves tefillah. And tefillah is a natural, the most rational, natural reaction that a person should have. You see? But unfortunately, a person doesn't operate on that level of reality, and he operates on the infantile, and that's why tefillah to him is a burden. That's a keva. That's a keva. What is the burden? The burden is, basically, what he's doing is he's carrying over from childhood certain ideas that he has, that he had towards his parental figures, and he's applying it to God. It means he simply has not left the infantile state. He is convinced that he is doing God a favor by davening, you see, which is an absurdity. And he's convinced also that he's using it as a protective measure, because if he doesn't daven, something bad is going to happen to him. He's afraid, you see, he's afraid. He's read something's going to happen, you see, and all the infantile notions are coming into play over here, so that tefillah could be something which unfortunately could be an instrument of an infantile mind, you see. Now we don't interfere with that, because like I told you before, Yadus has to reach everybody in every level, and you can't. These are important things. I mean, a child has been misspelled. That's me. You have to train a child in tefillah. How is he going to misspell? Going to misspell like a Chaim Brisker? No, he won't be able to. But he'll get there. That's his level now. He has to make transitions throughout his life. As in Yadus, a person keeps growing. But the problem is, if a person grows in one dimension and the other part of him isn't caught up to it, then he's in trouble. You see? And really, tefillah is precisely that case. Tefillah is the area that is expressive of these type of emotions. That's why Chazal said that tefillah becomes keva. Keva means it's a burden. He's doing God a favor, and that's it. And he doesn't want to do it. You see, he doesn't want to do it. It's a burden. He has to do God a favor now. It's a painful thing, and if he doesn't do it, something bad is going to happen to him. And he has to do it and get it over with. Okay, he's not going to not do it. He can't do it. He's afraid he's going to suffer the consequences. So he'll do it, and that's it. That's the framework. That's the mental framework of tefillah, where tefillah is done in an immature way. You see? Now what happens is that it's difficult for a person to rid himself of these emotions and to really see tefillah in the true way. In the true way, it's the most natural response. You see? That's why he says, Al tasa tefillah scha keva, al rachamin lasachnunim ufnei amakom. He says, why? Shenema, Ki kelchanun v'racham hu, erach apayim v'rav chesed, v'nicham al ha-ra. You say, what does it mean? It means a person, there's one more aspect. You see, one more infantile aspect in tefillah. That infantile aspect is that the person identifies with God. A certain identification with God that takes place also. It's a carryover from his childhood, a certain identification, which really leads, that's why you find people are, sometimes people ask, they say, how come people that are so religious are the worst people to deal with? And in certain cases, and it's true in many cases, that's what the Pasuk says, that what happens is that his whole frumkeit becomes an instrument of his own ego. He's walking with God. So naturally, I mean, he's superior to everybody else. There's a danger in these things. What's the danger? The danger is where a person hasn't overcome, hasn't realized what the infantile state is, and he hasn't risen to the next level. Really, if a person's reality, he recognizes that he's a creature, he's a separate creature. He's a creature apart from God. But the Creator is one that listens to him and that can help him, can achieve a change in his life. If he knows that fact, Ki kel rachum, chanav rachamu, erach apayim, rav chesed v'nicham al hara, so it's the most natural response for a person if he realizes this fact, and he knows this. Once he recognizes the Kabbalah sol malcho shamayim, you see, he recognizes what reality is. Not that he's doing God a favor, but he recognizes what reality is. And he recognizes that the source of reality does listen to tefillahs and can change his life. So what he does is, once he realizes what is necessary in his life in order to achieve the level of living where he's really in line with the true ideas, he most naturally has to ask God for what he needs. I mean, there's no question about it. It's the most natural transition, you say. But that's only possible. It's only possible if a person removes the infantile emotions that he has with regard to tefillah. That's why tefillah really is. Tefillah represents the person who's mispalel properly, represents the truly mature individual. Truly mature individual. That's why Rav Shimon said that Kriya Shema havi zohir b'tefillah b'Kriya Shema. Because this combination, these two things, are the most important, the most instrumental mitzvahs to bringing a person directly into the world of true reality. That's what Rav Shimon said.
It's natural.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, right. Tefillah, that's true. Tefillah, you're right about that. Tefillah is the most natural response to a person's situation, as we said. And if a person overcomes the infantile, there's no question. I mean, that he appreciates tefillah, he loves tefillah, and it's not a burden at all. It's not a burden at all. But there's one thing. What's the level of Rav Shimon ben Yochai? So Donny Meyer is asking. So what's the level of Rav Shimon ben Yochai? Is patur from tefillah? Or the Gemara says Rav Yehuda Nasi only daven once a month. Because he was on a higher level. So what's the difference, really? What's the difference? The answer is where it says heavy zohir. What does zohir mean? We said what zohir means. Zohir means that he's a kovesh yisrael. He's a kovesh yisrael. Because in tefillah, he has to have kriya shema in tefillah constantly, because he has to escape from the world of the psychological reality and the infantile, and move into the world of true objective reality. That's why he has to be Kovesh Yisrael. And that's why it's three times a day tefillah, Kriya Shema is twice a day, and that's why you have the whole formula. But a person who is on the level of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, he is past that stage already. Does not need it anymore. He is constantly in the world of reality. Does not need it. That's why he bypassed tefillah. That's why he doesn't need it anymore. That's why he's pukkah. But Avi Zohar, Rav Shimon was talking to regular people. Shimon was talking to regular people. Regular people said he's Zohir, you have to be a Zohir. Level of Shimon Yochai, that means he's constantly in a different world. Another Gemara said, Shimon Yochai came out of the cave and he saw a person was a farmer, a person was doing things for his own personal life, he couldn't understand. How can you waste your time? totally in the world of objective reality. How can, how's it possible? Apparently, tefillah he doesn't need anymore, because tefillah is in terms of transforming it, in terms of his. Yeah, he's in the terms. He doesn't need to change. That's right. You're right. But Kriya Shema is still necessary. Apparently, Kriya Shema is still necessary. Apparently, no matter how great a person is, there still is an unruly element in his soul, which he must stop, and he must think of his perception of the ultimate reality of God, and realign. Apparently, it would seem that way. It seems that's always necessary. That, as long as he's an Adam, that's necessary. But to translate it into tefillah would be a waste of time.
What about, like,
last week we were speaking about the next point that he mentions in the mission is Al Pi Rasha B'fnei Atzmecha. You shouldn't look at yourself as an evil person, as a Rasha, wicked. Now, what this has to do with the previous statements, we don't know. It's interesting, there are different pshatim on what it means Al Pi Rasha B'fnei Atzmecha. The first pshat we'll take is Rashi's pshat. Rashi says something unusual. It says, Kwama, Al Kaseh Dova, don't do something, Shayom Alamocha, Tasa ato as atzmacha Russia. That don't do anything that today or tomorrow you're going to make yourself into a Russia. The Toma, you'll say, Lo ma sisi Russia zeh. Why did I do this terrible thing? That's what Russia says in the name. Okay? So what is Russia saying? I mean, if it's something that's evil, you shouldn't do it, so don't do it anyway. I mean, you shouldn't do something that today or tomorrow you're going to say to yourself, why did I do this terrible thing? That's what Russia says. So you see, Rashi's going out of his way to say something different. Rashi didn't want to explain it, the plain shot. Don't be a Rashi in your own eyes. Don't look at yourself as evil. He gave some practical advice. Practical advice here is that, you see, there are two frameworks. In the beginning of the statement we mentioned, there are two frameworks within which a person works. One is the halachic framework. That's keeping tayyad. That is a different framework altogether. That's the framework in which a person recognizes his obligation to Tayyag, and actually is based on justice. It's based on two things. It's based on the fact that a person recognizes that the mitzvah is perfecting. That's number one. And secondly, that it's based on the fact that a person, even if a mitzvah in a particular situation should not perfect the person has an obligation of justice to keep Tayyag mitzvahs. Not only for himself, but simply for the Nesara, for the next generation. A person who is, that's why I say an individual who is perfected loves mitzvahs. Loves the mitzvahs. Because he's not a Baal Taiva, so therefore there's nothing that the mitzvahs keep him back from doing that he feels he really wants or he must have. The Torah is made and constructed in a way that there's nothing difficult really. The mitzvahs are constructed with all the halachas, so many thousands of halachas. There really is nothing that a person takes away from a person's life essentially. Small things. The main thing is to be a Baal Halacha. That's the main thing. And that's why the Pasuk says, Rocha Darchei Noam. The ways of the Torah are sweet. What does it mean they're sweet? It means the Halacha is constructed in such a way that a person can have a beautiful life. The only thing is, he has to have a certain Baal Halacha. Means he has a mental awareness of what he does. Halacha concepts. He has to be, everything he does, he has to be involved in what precisely the ideas are, the concepts are. He can't live like a behemoth. So that's number one. And the second thing is, That definitely is of the greatest benefit to an individual. The second thing is that the mitzvahs perfect the person. And moreover, even in a situation where a particular mitzvah might not be of benefit to a particular individual at a particular time, you see, the man who is a Baal Halacha is a perfected person. And as such, he loves justice. And since he loves justice, he recognized the system came down to him and he was able to have the system because of the other people, other generations that kept the mitzvahs, he has to keep it for the future generations. Otherwise, he doesn't care about justice. So really, the perfected man loves halacha, loves the halacha system. He enjoys it. He has a very positive attitude to it. It's not a burden to him, on the contrary. Something which he feels a sense of love for, because he knows how valuable it is and how important it is to him and to humanity. Since he's in love with the good, so the halacha system is not a burden. He has a positive feeling for it. I mean, a person that doesn't have that feeling, it's a sign that he didn't really reach a certain level of maturity. Either he's unjust, he doesn't recognize justice, or else he doesn't appreciate the system. But Racha Dachainan, with all the thousands of halachas, so many halachas, it's an unbelievable phenomenon. That's what the Pasuk means, Racha Dachainan. It's an unbelievable phenomenon with so many thousands of halachas. A person's life is Noam, sweet. It means that there's nothing really in life that they can't have that should make them miserable in any way. On the contrary. So that's one reason for keeping halacha. The second, I did mention it partially, but the one is halachic system, in other words. The second reason is because of perfection. Perfection. So you have to look at it in two frames. We mentioned in the beginning of the of this memra that the memra is speaking in terms of the second framework, not in terms of Kriya Shema and Tefillah as a halachic entity, but as a means of perfection. All right. Now that's what Rashi says. Rashi speaks over here. He says you shouldn't do something which will lead you to feel guilty in the future. You shouldn't do an avera that will lead you to feel guilty in the future. Why did he say you shouldn't do an avera that will lead you to feel guilty in the future? You shouldn't do an avera anyways. The answer is there are two planes in which a person relates to the Torah. One plane is the halachic system. We're not talking about that now. Now we're talking about something else. We're talking about the personal plane in which a person reaches perfection. Different dimension. So in that dimension, Rashi says, you should make sure not to do something, not to do an avera that will lead to a great harm, psychological harm. Psychological harm is that the person will feel guilty, become overcome by a sense of guilt. It's an amazing Rashi. Why? Because really the essence of all religions are guilt. That's the essence of all religions. And here Yadda says just the opposite. Make sure you don't fall into that guilt feeling. Because the guilt feeling is, I would say, the most overpowering feeling in human life. The most overpowering feeling is a sense of guilt. If a person gets caught up in that emotion, it's almost impossible for him to get out of it. Very, very difficult thing to do. But it's a pervading sense that overpowers the person. And it does not, it freezes his intellect, his mind. So therefore, according to Rashi, what Rashi is saying is that the whole memory follows, it goes through as follows. That you should be involved, be very careful when it comes to Kriya Shema, which is the recognition of reality. And Tefillah, the natural result after that recognition. Okay? And you should be wary of one thing in life, and that is that you should avoid the strong sense of guilt. Because if you get involved in a strong sense of guilt, you will not be able to reach perfection through the rational method, through the rational approach. That's what Rashi is saying. According to Rashi, that's why he would say these two these three things every day. Actually, breaks down to two components. The three things that he used to say every day break down to two components. What are the two components? One is the positive and the other one is the negative. The positive means that you should work on your emotions in a way that your emotions are led towards reality. That's Kabbalah or Malchus Shemayim. Lead your emotions by perceiving the reality, stopping momentarily to perceive the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That your emotions should flow in line with that reality. That's the way to raise yourself to a higher level. Then Tefillah, you see. And you should not allow your emotions to get involved in a sense of guilt. Because then you're not really going to be in a situation in which you're raising yourself to a higher level. You're just functioning on a very base level. A level in which you're reacting to a sense of guilt rather than raising yourself to a higher level for Chachma. So therefore, that's why that's the whole memory according to him. How do you change your emotions? You change your emotions through recognition, through knowledge. You avoid trying to change your emotions through a deep-rooted sense of guilt, because a deep-rooted sense of guilt is not going to lead you to the ultimate perfection. It'll just lead you to a reaction, a guilt reaction. That's what Rashi said. That's what Rashi might be doing. An interesting Rashi.
How do you do it?
That's what they do. They tell you you're condemned, you're a sinner, you're no good, you're evil, and that's why you need God. That's the way most religions, all other religions basically work on the sense of guilt. If it wasn't for the sense of guilt, actually, The historians, well, not the historians, I would say the more the philosophers really attribute, say the main emotion in religion is fear. It's fear. That's the main thing that drives a person towards religion is fear. The psychologists say that it's really guilt. Guilt is the underlying thing behind the fear. A person doesn't have fears unless the fear corroborates a certain... Brings to his unconscious mind a certain sense of, a strong sense of guilt. That's really the thing that fixes him, attaches him in there, and doesn't let him budge. So Yadis, we don't want that. Yadis want a person to move towards God in the proper way through Chachma. That's the way to move towards God, not through a sense of guilt. That's the Rashi. Interesting Rashi. Yes, I really must point out that, I mean, the fact that the davening seems to cater to a sense of guilt is wrong. It's because we come to the davening with an infantile idea, and then you project your own ideas on it.